Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last year, the city of Columbus, under the direction of its mayor, Mike Coleman, made something of an, I guess, a little bit of an end run around the gay marriage ban, at least an element of it, in all Ohio by extending city worker health benefits to domestic partners, benefiting the GLBT community. Building a strong GLBT community, he told 614 Magazine, is, quote, an opportunity to market to the rest of the country. It is a selling point when he's out trying to recruit companies to bring their jobs to Central Ohio. And for that sort of support, he and some local business leaders are being honored this week during the Pride Festival. Joining us to talk about that is Carla Rothen. She's Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. Welcome back to the show, Carla.
Thank you for having me.
So the theme of this year's celebration is Allies in Equality. Why this year? Why that?
Well, you know, I was honored when Mayor Coleman put me on the Bicentennial Commission. And so I was on that committee for about 5 years. And it came to pass that all the festivals were going to try to incorporate the bicentennial celebration within their festival and their parade and all of that. So we wanted to do the same thing, but we just had our anniversary of 30 years last year. So I didn't want to do another anniversary party. So I was thinking about Mayor Coleman and how I could incorporate him into our festival and parade. And so we decided to honor him as our Grand Marshal. And he has been an ally for us for many, many years. When he was on city council and the president, he came to our Pride celebration, of course, and he's been a long-serving mayor, I know, but has been at our Pride every year and has spoken on the stage and thanked the crowd for being there, thanking us, of course, for the economic impact that we've had on the city, every hotel being filled, every restaurant being filled, and he's been a great ally for us on a number of levels. And so then we started thinking, you know what, he's not the only one. There's so many corporations and so many leaders from the straight community in Columbus that have really helped us in our fight for equality, and maybe we can honor some others. And so there are 12 other folks from corporations in Central Ohio that will be honored as well. They'll ride on the float. They have VIP passes to the entire thing and their families. And also they'll be honored at the brunch on Sunday at the Athenaeum with Mayor Coleman. So it's really exciting. I think on Facebook, all of us are putting up the allies in our life that have helped us along the way. I've had teachers when I attended the Ohio State University that were very instrumental in my growth of coming out and being a good person to help me go through that process, and family members, and a lot of people have that. So I think that they're putting that up on Facebook and thanking their allies, which is really exciting.
My guest is Carla Rothen. She's Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. We're talking about Pride this week. It's Pride Week in Columbus. It's the Pride celebration over the weekend, including the always interesting and entertaining parade. And I was wondering, tell people where they can go. We'll post a link to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. But if they want to go to the Facebook page, what Facebook page are you talking about?
Oh, sure. There's a Stonewall Columbus Pride.
Okay, so the Stonewall Columbus.
We have a Facebook. Okay. ColumbusPride.org is our website. Okay. And of course, if you just put in Stonewall Columbus Pride, it will come up and all of the activities will be there. If you want to march, you want to come to Front and Broad Street by 11 a.m. on Saturday, June 16th. We're going to line up there and we'll step off at noon. We'll turn right on Broad and left on High. We'll go all the way down High Street, and we'll turn at Buttles. So anywhere along the parade route is a great place to sit and relax and watch the festivities. It's like a Mardi Gras, and some people have more taste than others, as you know. So be careful with that. But I think that overall, it's a really nice parade. We have a lot of families that come out, and we try to encourage people to keep everything in good taste for that.
It's one of the biggest in the country, but you were talking. We were talking earlier before we went on the air, you're like, double this, double that. I mean, what are you expecting?
You know, I think we probably will hit 230,000 people this year over the course of the 2 days, which is larger than we've ever had. But also, I don't know. I mean, we've had double the amount of vendors that are not non-food vendors, too, people that are just doing face-to-face marketing at the festival, and then double the parade entries, double the floats, double the, I think Nationwide is bringing 300 people to march with them. That's huge. Battelle, all of the corporations are bringing hundreds of people. And so it's going to be quite a spectacle to see all of that come down High Street, I think.
When you talk about Battelle and Nationwide and the rest that are among the allies that you're honoring this week, Give me an example of what you're honoring. Is it just about employee benefits, or is there more to it than that?
No,
that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. But, no, we asked the colleagues of the, it's kind of like a gay straight alliance or a resource group in a business. So these are big donors as well, of course, big sponsors of the festival.
They put their money where their mouth is.
Yes,
right.
Battelle came in at a very high level this year, and it's their first year that they've ever sponsored the parade, and I was amazed by that. But I think their employee resource group nominated a straight person from their corporation. It wasn't always their CEO. It might have been someone that has been very instrumental in helping them create that resource group and to create a welcoming atmosphere for employees there at their business. It's for all different reasons. You know, we are honoring Kim Carmine from Bud Light, and they were a sponsor. They've been our longest serving sponsor, even before we had any beer at Pride, when it was just a dry county there. We had Bud Light, and they wanted to get their name out to our community, so they sponsored us and gave us dollars and in kind. So this has been a really a big deal for them to be honored finally. You know, we usually honor an LGBT person that's a leader, but now we're going into our allies, and they're just thrilled with it.
To what extent you're talking about? It's a pragmatic decision. A lot of these companies and corporations and the mayor even are making. It's pragmatic. It's good business. Mm-hmm. It attracts business. It attracts people to the community. People want to come here because there's a welcoming atmosphere, and that means revenue and tax revenue and that sort of thing. But is it just about business?
Well, you know, we spend a quarter of every dollar as gay money. So I think in Columbus, Ohio, that's what we've estimated. You know, we've done a lot of surveys and we've looked at this, and we're spending a quarter of every dollar, and our money spends just as well as everyone. So, yes, they want to make sure that the bottom line is served. But also I think it's about attracting talent. And I think that keeping talent here in Columbus, if you go to the Ohio State University and you graduated this year and you're looking at a city that you want to live in, you want a good cost of living, yes. And if you happen to be an LGBT person, you want to have a great place to raise your family, too. We have a lot of people that are growing up and they're getting ceremonies or getting married, whether it's legal or not, and they're raising their families and they're having children. So we've got it's like a ball that's rolling down the hill now, and even the LGBT community is trying to catch it. And I think that that's really important to realize that our society is changing, and we've got to be able to serve those folks.
My guest is Carla Rothen. She's Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. We're talking about Pride Week. If you have a question or comment for Carla, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there as well. It's been a big year for allies, mm-hmm, of the gay movement, BLGT. You know, the president.
Yes.
For one.
Very
historical.
Grateful. Mm-hmm.
The CEO of Ernst & Young and a member of the Boy Scouts of America's National Board this morning, they announced that he'll work from within to change the ban on gay scouts and leaders. The debate over that was ignited recently when a Cub Scout leader was exiled because she's lesbian. Does he qualify as an ally? Is that what you're looking at? It's not
sure.
Just about money and support or always a financial stake.
No,
in it,
it's about making change
from within.
Mm-hmm. And people are doing that, and they're doing the right thing too. Because let's face it, some of our kids are still killing themselves. We've had a lot of that in the news too. A lot of people trying to commit suicide or succeeding and killing themselves because they think that they're different. They've been bullied every day, all day in school, and they just don't see any end in sight. They don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's disheartening when we lose these children, and it's awful. And so I think that people, of course, with working with youth that are standing up and saying, you know, it's okay, you're going to be fine. You know, this is a wonderful life. When I speak to schools, I speak to high schools and middle schools, you know, I of course come out and I tell them who I am, and I don't encourage all of them to just, you know, come out and tell everyone. I don't do that. I just basically talk to them about how good of a life I've had. And just because you're an LGBT person doesn't mean you're not going to have a wonderful life, even though everyone in your family might be telling you something different. It's not so. So I want them to see that kind of positive role model in myself if I can, or in the others. And it's very empowering to see tens of thousands of people, churches included, marching in solidarity for equality at that parade. It's very empowering, and it's very good for our young people and even our older adults that are coming out later in life and are worried that they're going to lose all their friends and all of their family because of it. It's very empowering, and it makes you feel good that you can make change that way, too.
There's been a split in the movement regarding gay marriage. There's one group that's going out to try to get it on the ballot to overturn the constitutional ban on gay marriage in Ohio. And there's another group, Equality Ohio, that's not against it, but is not helping because they don't think it's an effective way to go about it. What about Stonewall as an issue? And what is it, you know, is it something that's talked about in the community?
Sure. You know, our position as far as marriage is concerned is to educate our constituents and our members on why it's important to have marriage. You know, we've got a couple of different groups that in our community that are going about it one way or the other way, and different philosophies on how you actually build a coalition to be able to do that. But that's not our job. Our role and our job is to educate people on why it's important. You know, there's over 1,000 rights that straight people have when to marry and that we don't have. And it's very important for people to know what their rights are and how they install their rights in their families to protect them. So, for instance, you know, powers of health, power of attorney, financial, you know, all that stuff. We have seminars at the center, workshops and forums and seminars all year long, free, where they can actually talk to attorneys and to folks in the community that have gone through experiences or can give them advice and give them help. So that's really important.
How many of those 1,000 rights are incorporated in the issue of marriage?
I'm not sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
1,000, that's a lot. I mean, what are the larger categories then?
Well, like, for instance, you know, the president came out and said, you know, we're going to let you visit your loved one in the hospital if we're supposed to let you do that, right? But, you know, if you do not have your power of attorney when you go into the hospital, sometimes people aren't very nice about it, especially if they're prejudiced. And just remember, your power of attorney ends at death, right? Because that's just for the living and incapacitated, right? So you end at death. So if you don't have this other special piece of paper, you can't retrieve your partner's body if they're passed away and you have to go and get them. Your power of attorney's over. Just inheritance rights, you know, all of that. Tax, you know, taxes, all of that is very important for our people. And, you know, Social Security, we can't, you know, we're not going to be able to give each other their Social Security. If you're married for 10 years, though, to someone, they get your Social Security benefit. And that's very important to some people that are living on a small income. It's very important.
Bill in Clinton Township, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Good morning. I was calling to inquire of households that are composed of domestic partners, which I'm not quite sure of because I'm in and out on listening. But beyond that, how do you define a household that's not a domestic partnership?
Well, basically, a domestic partnership for insurance purposes for an employer, there's a couple of things that you have to prove, that you actually have a bank account maybe together, you actually have a loan together, or you live in the same residence and you both have the same residence. So you have to prove that. And right now, up until we do this in Columbus, you know, people have called the center. If they work for a small company and they can put their partner on their benefits, they still have to prove that they're domestic partners. And so they'll call the center and they'll say, how do we do that? And we have to send them to Toledo. That was the closest place for a long time. I believe Dayton has it now as well. Mm-hmm. But we just have to have something that proves that we... Now, big companies like Nationwide Insurance and the Ohio State University, they bypass all that. You don't have to prove that you have it. You just have one person that you can put on your health insurance, and that's that person. It doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight or, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. But for smaller corporations, sometimes it does, and they want to have a proof, a piece of paper that says that you're domestic partners.
Carla Rothen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Carla Rothen, she's executive director of Stonewall Columbus. We're going to get more into the domestic partner registries when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents the Chefs in the City online auction. You can bid now on great culinary theme packages, such as hosting a private party with food and music for 25 at Brothers Drake, or experience an All That Jazz weekend with suite accommodations from Westin Columbus. But hurry, this is the last week of the auction, and these packages close Thursday, tomorrow, June 14th. All proceeds benefit children's educational programming on WOSU. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to view all items up for bid.
Support for 89.7 comes from Home Care Assistance, in-home care for older adults with a philosophy of promoting health, well-being, and quality of life for all clients, no matter their limitations. Information on Home Care Assistance at 481-8888.
68 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, warming up to a high near 78. Clear skies tonight and a low of 52. Sunshine for Thursday, a high of 84. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
One of the reasons Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman is being honored as a BLGT ally and will be the Grand Marshal for the Gay Pride Parade on Saturday is his support for domestic partner benefits for city employees and for his recent proposal with other leaders for creating a domestic partner registry aimed at creating a for the city of Columbus, for the workers in the city of Columbus, and for the city of Columbus. Joining us now to talk about that is Zach Klein. He's a Columbus City Council member and chair of the Development Committee and another proponent of the registry who was on hand for the press conference that announced the proposal. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me in.
Also with us to share their perspective is John Caron. Welcome, John.
Hi.
And Chad Eberle. Welcome, Chad.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
John and Chad were married recently in New York State. Want to hear what they have to say about some of these issues. So, Zach, a similar registry was proposed in 2008. How do the two proposals mirror or contrast with each other?
Well, what the city has done thus far is to create domestic partner benefits, and those are currently in place. And to take the next step of what the city really can do under the confines of the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the state of Ohio is institute a domestic partnership registry, which is what the mayor, myself, and Council President Andy Ginther have done.
The couple, well, so is it the same thing or is this different?
No, it's different. The domestic partnership benefits are similar to what you and Carla were talking about in the first part of your show, where individuals can receive health benefits if they're in a domestic partner relationship, regardless of sexual orientation. The registry is a place where folks, as proposed by the mayor and council, can come down to City Hall, and it's going to be housed in the clerk's office, where committed individuals, regardless of sexual orientation, can put on a piece of paper on a public document that they're in a committed relationship. The legal effects of that in the city of Columbus is in order to be eligible for domestic partner benefits, the way the law is currently written is that you have to sign an affidavit, and there's certain criteria in the affidavit that has to be met under the attestation of perjury that you're going to meet those criteria and you can receive the benefits. That's housed in the Human Resources Department. The registry will allow individuals in the alternative to maybe not going through the hassle of signing the affidavit to the Human Resources Department, the registry itself will be evidence for City of Columbus employees to be eligible for the benefits.
It'll be adequate. There won't have to be an affidavit.
Well, there will be an affidavit that's different than the affidavit with the Human Resources Department, but evidence of the registry is evident, or being on the registry is evidence itself that you're eligible for the benefits. So it's an either or. You can either go through and sign and go through the Human Resources Department because maybe someone doesn't want to disclose that they're in a LGBT relationship. And I think we have to be protective of folks that maybe don't want to come out, and then we have to protect their wishes not to do so. So there's no problem with, you know, having that affidavit signed between the Human Resources
That'll
Department.
That'll still be available.
Absolutely. But maybe folks do want to come out and they're proud of the relationship that they're in. They're not afraid to hide it. And that's great to be on the registry, too.
John and Chad, you were married in New York recently.
Yes.
When something, you know, what do you think about the registry and is it something you would participate in, John?
I think it would be something I'd like to consider. I have a lot of questions about it. For instance, since we're legally married in the state of New York, would Columbus just recognize that in lieu of going and signing the domestic registry? I also noticed online that the domestic registry indicated that you should take advantage of this if you are not currently married. And we are married in the state of New York, so I'm not sure. That's kind of a gray area. I'm not sure what whether it's appropriate for us or not.
Zach Klein? Good question.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think the problem that you're posing is a problem of having, you know, the whole the onset of DOMA and the federal law that prohibits the recognition of marriages from other states to another. So your recognition of the recognition of your marriage in New York is unfortunately not going to be recognized in the state of Ohio. So your question that you're proposing to me is an interesting one. And this is a working document. It's a document in progress. And it's certainly something to consider as we finalize what is going to be the ultimate domestic partnership registry.
Is it a document that could challenge federal law?
No.
Okay, you can't do that. You can't enact something that you know is in conflict with federal law.
Well, our intent is not to challenge the federal law as much as it is to promote the diversity and inclusiveness of the city of Columbus and to have a document that what we can do, considering the confines of the law that we can work in the state of Ohio, to do the utmost of what we can do to protect inclusiveness and diversity, because we're an open and smart city. And I think when I was talking to an individual at Nationwide, you know, they have offices all over the state or all over the country. They have offices in states where folks can be married, in New York or in Iowa. And when you work in one of those offices and they're saying, hey, come be transferred to Columbus, Ohio, they may raise questions. You know, what is Columbus, Ohio? Are they an open and accepting city? And I think by having a registry, by having domestic partner benefits, it's evidence that we are an open and accepting city, that we accept people for who they are as individuals.
So when John was referring to the idea that if you're not married, you should do this, that's for people who aren't. It's not referring to same-sex partners. It's referring to people who might be living together who are heterosexual.
That's correct.
Okay.
The intention of that language in the proposed registry is preventing those that are recognized under Ohio law that are obviously of opposite sex under Ohio law from being married and being on the registry.
So, John or Chad, chime in. Chad Eberle, do you have benefits? Do you share benefits now through your work?
No.
No, we don't.
And so what does that cost you? What's the impact?
Well, unfortunately, it means obviously separate health care. It also means that our benefits are not transferable in the same way as they would be, you know, if we were recognized. Ironically, I did work for a company at one point that did have recognized domestic partnership and would allow it. But under federal tax law, we were almost double penalized because for me, the income or the portion that the employer paid was considered income that I had to pay tax on. And so it actually worked out much more expensive
than just paying two premiums.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Correct. So, the intent was certainly good and very noble, but it's certainly not a panacea.
As far as, you know, your decision to get married in New York, you knew that wasn't going to be a panacea either.
True.
But you went ahead and did it. For the emotional reasons, it's completely understandable emotionally mm-hmm. why, you know, you want to get married because you mm-hmm. feel that way about each other. But it was a lot of trouble to go through, too. Chad, what about that?
Correct. I mean, sure, we would have loved to have had the legal marriage here. I mean, we live here. Our friends are here. This is our community and our home. But we knew that was probably years away. And we did have a ceremony at our church in 2004. We are Christians, so it was important for us to do that in the setting of our faith community, in front of our friends and family and our God, although we knew that was not legally binding. So we just wanted the legal recognition to know that we are married, so that, you know, when I turn to John and I call him my husband, there's not a little voice in the back of my head saying, well, yes, but not really. You know, now that we are legally married, I have no reservations about saying that. And that's important to us. You know, the word does matter.
Zach Klein, the registration would not be legally binding on hospitals and schools in determining policies. Would it be legal for a school, for example, to recognize the partner of a parent of a student Or does there are there other laws that would transcend that? I'm wondering, are there other laws out there that say that tell the schools one thing, and that this registry really would, even if the school wanted to, it wouldn't make any difference?
Well, the registry's purpose is in the private sector is going to be used as a tool. It's a tool for the private sector, like Carla was talking about, mm-hmm. for small businesses in particular, as evidence of folks being in a committed relationship to be eligible for that particular private.
They don't have to go through all the trouble and
exactly. Yeah. The document does not and cannot. We'll leave it up to the law professor to talk about the details, but cannot bind private enterprise to force someone to recognize a relationship. It'll merely be a tool if a conflict arises, if there's ever any issues, or if there's hospital visitation rights in question, that particular entity can reference the registry as evidence of someone being in a committed relationship to receive the equal benefits under the law.
Is it for hospitals? And of course, we'll refer to the professor in the next segment if we need to. But is it there? Is it just their own policies, or are they the federal privacy laws, the HIPAA? Is that what's coming into play when they don't allow partners to visitation rights for partners?
I'll yield to the law professor on that and just refer back to the fact that the registry can be evidence that folks are in a committed relationship.
Last year, the city was in the process of examining an addition to its contractor ordinance that would prohibit those entering into contracts with the city from discriminating by sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. What happened to that?
It's currently in effect, and I think we have a broad swath of classifications ranging from gender and race all the way up to LGBT status, veteran status, that protects individuals from discrimination in housing, discrimination in employment, based under the Columbus City Code.
Had there been examples or instances where there was discrimination that spurred that, or was it once again just a gesture that you're making to show that the community is open and welcoming?
Well, I've talked to Carla Rothen, the previous guest you had on a couple different occasions, and she's referenced the fact that folks call Stonewall, her organization, all the time about issues and concerns about that an individual may be discriminated against trying to get a house in the city of Columbus. So it's important to have the laws in effect to prevent that from happening. And I also want to take it a step further and say that you're right. It's not only does it prevent discrimination, but it also is a symbolic step that we are a very tolerant city. We're a very open city, and we're a smart city. We do everything possible to promote diversity and equality.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Zach Klein, Columbus City Council member and chair of the Development Committee. Also with us, John Karen and Chad Eberle, a local married gay couple. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Of course, John Karen and Chad Eberle were married in another state, not Ohio, which now bans it in the Constitution. They were married in the state of New York. Older gay couples are particularly concerned these days. As their numbers grow, as acceptance of coupling has grown, their numbers have grown, and the issues of inheritance and Social Security and companionship, particularly after incapacitation, have grown. Is this something that you two, Chad and John, have addressed in legal documents for yourselves?
Yes, we've had wills as well as various powers of attorney and that type of thing set up. So I feel confident that we've taken care of as much as we can. Protecting ourselves. We also, of course, have supportive families, which not everybody unfortunately has. But the bottom line is that still doesn't give us all the rights and benefits that are afforded to heterosexual married couples under state and federal tax law. And so we will always be at a disadvantage until, there's equity across all the laws for same-gender couples.
Zach Klein, are those kinds of documents, is that the sort of thing that's going to qualify somebody for the registration?
As proposed, the domestic partnership criteria are that you're not currently married, which we kind of dealt with that earlier about whether a recognition in another state would qualify, because I think the intent here was not currently married under Ohio law. Mm-hmm. Shares responsibility with the employee or shares responsibility with someone else's common welfare at least 18 years of age and can enter into a contract, and that they have financial dependence, interdependence on one another.
And when you mean financial interdependence, sometimes you have to have proof of that, right? Like a shared checking account or bank account or something
That's
like
correct.
That.
That's correct. And those documents can be evidence of financial interdependence.
Any pushback on this?
Not that I'm aware of. I think the fact this is a very open and accepting city, and the steps have been taken. And I think Carla mentioned that, was it 20 or 25 cents of every dollar spent in the city of Columbus or earned in the city of Columbus is from the LGBT community. The LGBT community makes up a significant representation of Central Ohio, and that we're smart, we're open, and the city accepts people for who they are. And this is just another tool in our toolbox to help folks recognize the relationships that they're in.
In February, you signed on to a statewide effort to give gay people the right to marry in Ohio, and since then there's been a split in that movement. Where do you stand on that, with those working to get the issue on the ballot in 2013 or with those on the side of Equality Ohio who want to wait?
I want to do what's best possible for the movement. You know, I support gay marriage, and I want to do what's the best possible way to ensure that the outcome is that we have marriage equality for everyone, because that's essentially what we're asking for. We're asking for equal rights under the law so that you receive the same tax benefits and that we're not discriminating against anyone based on who they are as individuals. That this is really an equality issue. It's a legal issue of equality. It has nothing to do with whether your church is accepting or not accepting. It has everything to do with under the documents that govern us as individuals, whether it's a city charter, a state constitution, or a United States constitution, is that everyone is treated equally. And it's a fairly simple premise, is that everyone is treated equally, and that's all we're all seeking to do here.
But there's that little, well, one of the issues is that it does reference churches and exempts them from going against whatever creed they subscribe to in performing marriages if it does conflict with their creed. So is that
exactly.
Is that a problem you have? Or
no, I think that churches should be able to do what they want. We live in a free country, and we have certainly the separation of religion and the separation of church and state. So this is about an issue of under the government's eyes,
right?
Is everyone treated equally? Not an issue of religion.
Okay, so you just haven't decided yet, or you're not getting into that?
I haven't been asked to wade into it. I'm not. I'm more interested in the outcome being that everyone is accepted equally and treated equally under the law, and I work with both sides to ensure that what I can do as a council member and do as just a citizen of the city of Columbus and the state of Ohio to push the ball forward so that everyone is treated equally.
John and Chad, how do you feel about that, the split? Any thoughts about that, Chad Eberle?
Well, for me personally, frankly, John's a little more patient with regards to the progress of the gay rights movement. I tend to get more impatient about it. It frustrates and kind of saddens me to see the state by state patchwork of rights that places so many couples like us in sort of a limbo. I feel that it's more a federal issue. I think ultimately it will be decided by the Supreme Court, the way rights for interracial couples were in the late 60s. I feel that's where it's headed. I feel that the first step is to repeal DOMA.
The Defense of Marriage Act.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. That would be the first step. But I do feel that ultimately the Supreme Court is going to hear a case on this and that it will be decided federally, so that it will take this out of the state's hands, so to speak.
John Kieran, why do you think you're more patient, as Chad put it?
I guess because I do see that there are incremental benefits. I look at how much has happened in the last 10 years and the pace of that and the cadence is increasing exponentially. So I feel like, we all know what the right side of history will be, and it's just a matter of how soon are we going to get there. I feel pretty confident that, despite, kind of certain groups that send out very troubling messages, I would say that, the polls and the statistics and just my own experience in working and talking with people are that people are, increasing in acceptance, and it's becoming more and more of a non-issue. When I was at work and I told people about our upcoming marriage, no one even blinked. I mean, it was just, they were congratulatory. I was treated the same way as any other person in the situation would be. And I feel like I think we're headed there. But I do agree with Chad that I think for some states, it's going to, you know, just like interracial marriage was, I believe, 40 years ago, it's going to have to be mandated at the federal level at some point, because I think that it's just becoming increasingly unworkable to have different recognitions of marriage, of domestic partnership, and all that sort of thing. And it's putting employers and all sorts of other folks at an extreme disadvantage, because they're not able to, you know, come up with, you know, sane policies and practices, because everything is different everywhere.
Zach Klein, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Zach Klein is a Columbus City Council member and chair of the Development Committee. And coming up, a law professor from the Moritz College of Law will be talking about DOMA and the Proposition 8 ruling in an appellate court recently. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Well, the next Fresh Air, screenwriter and director Lynn Shelton talks about her new film, Your Sister's Sister, starring Emily Blunt, Rosemary DeWitt, and Mark Duplass. She also directed the indie film Hump Day and the episode of Mad Men from season 4 in which Joan considers having an abortion. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And be sure to tune in to WOSU-TV tonight. The 1883 eruption of Krakatoa, which occurred in present-day Indonesia, is the second greatest volcanic eruption in recorded history. More than 36,000 people were killed, and the explosion was heard more than 5,000 miles away. Tonight on WOSU-TV, watch the dramatic story of the eruption, a family trying to escape the devastation, and a ship that is trapped at sea by the phenomenon. Watch Krakatoa: The Last Days tonight at 10 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
69 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high near 78. Clear skies tonight, a low of 52. More sunshine Thursday, a high of 84. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
A federal appeals court declared California's voter-approved ban on state same-sex marriage unconstitutional on Tuesday in a ruling that was both historic and, perhaps more importantly, narrowly drafted. The 2-1 ruling by the 9th U.S. Court of Appeals in San Francisco was the first ever by a federal appellate court to overturn any of the recent proliferation of state laws defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman. Joining us now to talk about what to expect going forward and what it means in practice is OSU Moritz College of Law professor Mark Spindelman. Mark is co-author of a new 6th edition of Family Law, Cases and Materials, one of the leading case books in family law used by law professors across the country to teach their students about family law. Congratulations for that, Mark, and welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the show as well, John Karen and Chad Eberle, a local couple who are married recently in New York State. Thanks for sharing your observations and your perspective with us today.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. First of all, I mentioned at the top that I referred to the idea that many cities are starting to do a quote-unquote end run around the gay marriage bans by offering benefits to same-sex couples. Okay. That implies maybe something that is not and completely on the up and up, and that's not the case.
Right. So under the Ohio Constitution, as it's been interpreted by the Ohio Supreme Court, Ohio's marriage amendment prohibits the state from recognizing same-sex marriage or the full equivalence of same-sex marriage like civil unions. Domestic partnership benefits, like the city of Columbus is contemplating from the description that the councilman was offering a few minutes ago, do not come anywhere close to being full marriage rights. or the full equivalent. So they raise the domestic partnership benefits registry certainly raises no constitutional question under the Ohio Constitution. I just think mm-hmm. it's important for the listeners to understand that the representatives of Columbus City are not engaging in any activity that would potentially run afoul of the Ohio Constitution.
There have been challenges of those kinds of benefits, though.
Yeah, I mean, so the domestic partnership registries have not gone entirely without challenge. Mm-hmm. But there's, as I say, under the reigning interpretation of Ohio's marriage amendment by the Ohio Supreme Court, they present no constitutional question under the Ohio Constitution.
Let's talk about the appellate court ruling on Proposition 8 last week. I think it was last Tuesday. I mentioned that it's both historic. And I said why, but more importantly, perhaps it is narrowly drafted. So can we talk about the narrow nature of it?
Sure, sure. So the decision that the Ninth Circuit rendered in the Proposition 8 case called Perry against Brown now is a very narrowly tailored decision, narrowly tailored to address the particularities of the law in the state of California. So the court emphasized that what makes the situation in California a little bit unique compared to situation in other states is that marriage rights for same-sex couples had been recognized under California law, only to be taken away by the voters through this constitutional amendment. And there was something particular about withdrawing rights that distinguishes the situation in California from other states like Ohio and elsewhere that simply refused through constitutional amendments to allow same-sex couples to marry under state law.
And so, therefore, it's narrow because unless you're a state that has done what California has done, which is renege on a promise of the law, it doesn't apply. It wouldn't change Ohio's status as a state banning it constitutionally.
Right. So the court grounds its principle in that particular situation, that particular circumstance, which so far is unique to California, although it may happen in other jurisdictions as well. But so far, a ruling like that ruling, even if it were the governing law in Ohio or in the Sixth Circuit, which is the circuit that governs Ohio at a federal level, wouldn't apply in Ohio because we have never recognized the rights of same-sex couples and taken them away.
So the question is, what will the Supreme Court decide first? Because now it's headed to the Supreme Court for all intents and purposes. Will they decide whether states can deny same-sex couples the right to marry, which is the case in Ohio, or whether the federal government can refuse to recognize same-sex couples' valid marriages under state law?
Yeah. So let me just explain to mm-hmm. the listener. So there was another decision by another federal circuit court, the First Circuit, recently deciding that the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which was talked about before, what was constitutionally problematic up under both the Equal Protection Clause and also raising some 10th Amendment states' rights concerns. Not unconstitutional under the 10th Amendment, but that there were some 10th Amendment problems that raised the level of scrutiny that the courts would give to the legislation. So there are two cases, one from the First Circuit and this case from the Ninth Circuit, that are poised to go up to the Supreme Court. There's lots of speculation going on right now quite actively about which case the court either might or should take first, which is narrower, which is broader, which has the greater impact, which has the smaller impact. And so lots of debate is happening right now sort of out in the country among law professors, among others, who are trying to speculate about which way the court will go if it takes either one of the cases.
And in some way, I mean, it depends. It's kind of like an Escher drawing. It depends on which way you look at each one of them. And when I think about Proposition 8, I think, well, it's narrow, but it's broad in the sense that there are a lot of laws passed every year in states across the country that give rights to people. And it does address that issue. It may not have anything to do with gay rights, yeah. but it addresses that issue very broadly in that way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, sort of people have asked me, you know, sort of which I think is broader and which I think is narrow. And I say pretty much, you know, I haven't put it quite that way, which I think is a great way to put it. It just really depends on how you look at it. In one sense, targeting a particular piece of legislation at the federal level, which can't be and isn't replicated at the state level because it just can't be, makes the challenge from the First Circuit to the Federal Defense of Marriage Act seem like it potentially could be a narrower ruling because it doesn't require any states to recognize same-sex marriage. It only says when states do, then they must then the federal government must follow and respect what the states have done. On the other hand, the decision from the Ninth Circuit affects California law in this unique way that we were describing, but potentially has the and the court was quite clear that it wasn't saying that there's a constitutional right to same-sex marriage under the federal constitution. But its decision sort of that's in contrast to a lower court decision in the very same case that said that there was, in fact, such a constitutional right under the federal constitution. So that case could sort of easily slip into that mode of deciding a broader issue, but at the same time, so could the Defense of Marriage Act case. So again, exactly as you say, it's an Escher-esque kind of picture. It all depends on how you look at it, which is broader, which is narrower.
And is there any chance that the U.S. Supreme Court would take on both at the same time?
Anything is possible. I mean, you just know. We don't know.
It's not necessarily an either-or proposition.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it could decide one case and then send the other case back. You know, take it up and then send it back to the lower courts to reconsider in light of the judgment in the other case. There are various possibilities. Lots. You know, sort of. There's a reason why Time Magazine had a cover story about Justice Kennedy recently, because so much of what the court will do either is up to him as the swing justice, or other justices who are presumably trying to think through for themselves what Justice Kennedy might do in a particular case.
Because ultimately, neither one of them is asking somebody, do you approve of gay marriage or not?
Don't have to be, right?
Right.
I mean, the cases don't have to be understood that way. That's right. That's right.
My guest is Mark Spindelman. He's a law professor at the OSU Moritz College of Law. If you have a question or comment for him, we're talking about the Defense of Marriage Act and the Ninth Circuit ruling on the Proposition 8 out of California, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu. You can go to our Facebook page at the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can post your question or comment there. To our other guests, John Karen and Chad Eberle, an email from Glenn in Columbus, writes, churches have always had discretion in who they marry. That covers the building and the clergy. My church requires premarital counseling by our pastor just to make use of the sanctuary. What do your guests think about being married by a church versus being married in the eyes of the government?
Chad? Well, I think they're...
John?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think they are two completely separate things, both legally and conceptually. We've always had a society that separates church and state, which is to the protection of both, in my opinion. And, you know, there is nothing under consideration in terms of allowing civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples that would in any way infringe upon the church's right to conduct either ceremonies themselves or to allow their buildings to be used for that. Churches have the right to make their own decisions. And in fact, in some cases, an argument could be made that our laws like DOMA are violating the religious liberty of churches to be able to perform weddings.
Because churches who are doing it, the federal government's not...
Well, because they're not being allowed to do that. They are, you know, effectively being prohibited from doing wedding ceremonies at their church that would be recognized under state and federal law.
Mark Spindelman, any thoughts about that?
So not a First Amendment expert. But I think that the idea here is that there's, in ordinary cases, when a church performs a marriage or when a clergyman performs a marriage, that the state law will recognize that marriage and that it'll have the effects of state law. And in this case, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, as well as Ohio law, doesn't recognize any same-sex marriages, no matter who they're performed by. So I think that that's got to be the idea. Whether that constitutes a violation of religious liberty, I think is a thornier question.
I'm going to turn to Beth in Clintonville. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Beth, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Beth from Columbus. And I was just saying that when I lived in California, the way that same-sex partnership or domestic benefits were introduced to state was the city of San Francisco said if anybody wanted to do business with them outside of California, they had to offer domestic partnership. And that really upset the churches, and American wasn't too thrilled with it. But because it was a mandate, that's how they were able to break the ice, so to speak. And I think sometimes we forget that. And I'm really happy that the Ninth Circuit overturned Prop 8.
So this is a great point. I think it goes not only to what the Ninth Circuit did, but also to what the City of Columbus is doing, and whether the carve-outs that were being described before sort of in part are shaping the lack of a kind of blowback in response to the proposed ordinance. So it's interesting, you know, sort of a question of state and local law, whether or not a city like Columbus in Ohio, either legally or politically, would be in a position to do something like what the caller's describing the city of San Francisco did. So you could imagine sort of the domestic partnership registry, at least in as a conceptual matter, sort of leaving aside the questions of state and local power. You could imagine a kind of toothier, sort of beefier piece of domestic partnership legislation that wouldn't only provide a kind of vehicle for corporations to say, yes, this person is a registered domestic partner in the city of Columbus, therefore we accord them these particular rights. You could at least imagine sort of if the state constitution is written in such a way that would allow a local government like the city of Columbus to do something like what San Francisco did, that it would be a kind of more aggressive measure that would say not only may companies use this domestic partnership registry, but they must recognize registered domestic partnerships and treat them the same as married couples under law in other jurisdictions. I think at that point you might start to get a sort of move in the direction of raising some questions about whether that would conform with the Ohio Marriage Amendment, but I think it sort of raises an interesting question about how far we could go in the city of Columbus.
Well, home rule has already been under attack for several years now, and that's what we're talking about is home rule in the state of Ohio, and whether and in state of we do have it, but it's been eroded over time. What is the timing of this? Is this something, are these two questions, whether it's the Proposition 8 question or the DOMA question, is this something that they have to decide before October, or how does that work?
Yeah, so the folks who've lost in the Court of Appeals now have a chance to decide whether to take the case, to appeal the case to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court has an opportunity to decide whether they'll hear the cases or not. Mm-hmm. So I think we can expect some movement. I think I saw something that said it's a few months or month and a half, 2 months, September or so for the decision whether to appeal, and then sometime after that. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was a decision made to appeal earlier than that in one of the cases, and for the court to make a decision in due course.
So in the next year, then
certainly with the, well, we'll know certainly within the next year whether the cases have been appealed and whether the Supreme Court has decided to hear either one of them.
If you want to get a call in, you just have a few seconds. I'm going to turn to Byron in Columbus right now. If he's put on the air, 614-292-8513. Okay, Byron, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call. Yep. I just wanted to mention that just as a comment, the radical idea is to prohibit our LGBT friends and neighbors from participating in full equality under the law. That's the radical idea. It's not a radical idea to allow them access to civil marriage equality. That's who we are, and the sooner the better. And I just think that there's a group of people who desperately want to partake in the basic institution of society. We shouldn't be prohibiting them from doing that. We should be celebrating that. And that's all I had to say. Thanks, Sam.
All right, Byron. Mm-hmm. And there's a note to end on. I want to thank my guests, Mark Spindelman, law professor at the OSU Moritz College of Law. Mark, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us today, John Caron and Chad Eberle, a gay couple that married in New York recently and agreed to join us today. And we really appreciate your insights and your comments. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.